Hello, this is Chris English welcoming you to another edition of At Home This Morning, our programme of interviews about matters of interest and importance for both our older listeners and those not so old, in and around the city of Brighton and Hove. We'll be hearing from seven different organisations about a wide variety of topics, including how you can make sure you've got enough cash for a secure retirement with Sue Hayward and John Tate, and we'll be joined by the Queen of Clean herself, with Aggie McKenzie dropping by with Bob Kerr to provide some advice on gas appliance safety, just as we're getting ready to put our own devices to bed as the weather starts to warm up. And not before time, I hear you cry. Richard Beard will be here with news on the closure and imminent demolition of the chapel at the Royal Sussex County Hospital. But don't despair, as Richard will have some good news as well about the preservation of the interior artefact. And television star Rory Douglas-Speed will take a break from filming Hollyoaks to tell us about the stigma of suffering with type 1 diabetes. And for our final two items, we'll be providing a curtain raiser of the One Garden Brighton project with Liz Mooland that has already transformed a long-neglected part of Stanmer Park. And to conclude this PAC programme, prize-winning children's author Lou Fraser will be along to introduce us to Gertie the Littlest Yak. Are you retirement ready? Indeed, have you retired already? Well, one of the important questions is, have you got enough money to retire on? Well, joining us, Sue Hayward and John Tate. Good morning.
Hello there, Chris.
Good morning, Chris.
Really, we must start with the question. It's how much money do you need to retire on?
Do you know what? It's one of those, no, there's no one-size-fits-all magic figure. I wish I could give you a figure and say, hey, if you've got X, you will have a comfortable retirement and you can go travelling and do all your wonderful things that you want to do. There isn't a fixed amount. And of course, everyone's retirement is different and unique. Some people like to travel. Some people want to stay home and got lots of hobbies they want to indulge, or maybe start a small business, or, you know, spend more time with their family, friends, that kind of thing. So there's no overall figure, but it is important to start saving from as young an age as possible. And when you get to retirement age, you know, it's worth keeping tabs on what you've got and actually doing on a regular basis, kind of keeping tabs on what you've got and how much it's worth, so that you don't run out of money. Because the report from Standard Life Aberdeen is actually saying that two-thirds of the people who are planning to retire this year are very likely to run out of money.
I mean, that sounds horrendous thought, to actually run out of money when you're not in a position to get a job to earn some more. Can it be like that?
It could, in the absolute worst scenario. But having said that, most people, you know, do a lot of planning and think about their retirement. Obviously not everybody, but a lot of people do. And, you know, what we're here today is to sort of encourage people to just think about it and take a look, you know, at what they've got in the way of savings, investments, pensions. There's lots of retirement calculators where you can plug your details in to see potentially what you've got. And even with the state pension age, as we all know, obviously that's increasing, and it's not a huge amount anyway. At some sort of £180 a week is the top whack. But it's worth looking at what you've got. I mean, with the state pension, for example, if you defer taking that, you can actually give a little bit of a boost to your state pension. So if you put off and say, well, I don't want to take it when I can at age 66, then it will grow a little bit more each year. And equally with any private pensions you've got. Of course, you don't have to take them all at age 55. If you actually take a little bit when you need it, the amount left in that pot, of course, will grow over time.
How does one calculate the pot?
Well, I mean, a good place to start is if you look on the Retirement Advice Service at Standard Life Aberdeen. It's got a kind of handy, I call it a ready reckoner, where you can plug in your details of what you've got in the way of savings, investments, if you're a homeowner, and your age, when you're planning to retire. And it will look at all of that and number crunch it, and then work out whether your income in retirement is likely to be enough depending on what you want to do. So that way you'll get an idea of how much you're worth.
I would say that as well. It's never too late to start building a plan, even if you are already retired, even using that service to get an estimate of, well, going forward, how much could you spend every year before running out of money? It's always a good check to do. Even if you've got your own plan already, do a check of that and get an independent view of, are my finances going to last as long as I need? Because a lot of people underestimate how long they're going to live. And that's a key thing that I work with clients every day and see that actually when they look a bit further to the long term, they might need to adjust their plan or adjust their spending now to make sure they've still got money in the future that they might need.
Now, of course, the elephant in the room is equity release, isn't it? We haven't talked about that. And that's something that people don't like to talk about.
There's no one size fits all. So what's right for one person may not be right for somebody else. And some people prefer, if they've got a home, they might want to sell up and downsize. But certainly equity release can be an option. If you want to stay in your home, let's say you're living in the family home, maybe even the kids have left home, but you don't want to move. Equity release means you can release, obviously, a chunk of money from the value of your home without moving. But of course, you've got to consider there are fees, the interest will roll up. So it does mean that if you're looking to pass your home on as an inheritance to your family in later years, it won't be worth maybe the price that you were going to sell it for tomorrow. So it is something, and also you need to think carefully about it. So it's something you need to do a lot of homework about, as with any financial decision. But for some people, that may be a really good option.
And how is the safest way to find out without sticking your head into the lion's den of sharks?
Well, I mean, the industry has become hugely regulated now. A few years ago, you're going back a few years, when, yes, equity release was one of those areas that people were like, oh, steer clear of. But it's now regulated, the Equity Release Council. So they really, really regulate it very, very well. There's a whole list of companies on there where you can find which companies are regulated to do equity release. You can find a lot about it. There's even guarantees that your home can't go into negative equity when eventually the time comes to sell it. But of course, like with anything, if you're approached randomly by somebody offering some kind of opportunity, then do steer clear. Go through the appropriate channels and sources to find the right people.
On a general point about pensions and about money, what are the golden rules?
I mean, I would say when it comes to pensions, it's, you know, put a little bit aside. As John was saying, you know, you can keep putting money aside in later life. And while it's great to have some money in cash savings, I'm not suggesting every penny should go in a pension pot, because we all need money if the car breaks down or, you know, the washing machine packs up, that kind of thing. But if you've got some money coming in or extra money, considering a pension, the bonus of a pension is, of course, the government put its hand in its pocket and you get 20% tax relief if you're a basic rate taxpayer. So you get a little bit of a boost that way as well. And obviously, because it's invested in the stock market, while that can be something of a roller coaster ride, historically, the stock market does increase. So you're likely to make more than, of course, you would if you're just sticking it in the bank with the current shabby savings rates on offer.
So is the outlook for people retiring, say, this year or next year, or even have already retired, is it bleak or is it looking favourable?
Well, do you know what? The great news is people who retired last year, and when you think about last year, right in the height of the pandemic, 51% of the class of 2020, if you like, said they actually spent less than they budgeted. Now, of course, that may well be because they couldn't travel and they couldn't go out and do all these wonderful things they wanted to. But 42% of them as well took advice before they retired, which compares to around the same figure this year. So it's good to hear that people are taking advice. They are thinking about it rather than just hoping to jump in and wing it.
And where can people get more information?
I'll let John do the honours on that, if you like.
Yeah, the best place to go is standardlifeadvice.co.uk. And on there, you can get a free quick estimate of what your retirement income could be and some of the opportunities, if you're already retired, what they could be to maximise the money that you're living on.
Now, as the spring weather starts to warm up and lockdown restrictions ease, you probably haven't given much thought to getting your gas appliances serviced. Well, joining us, Bob Kerr, Gas Safe at Register, and also Aggie McKenzie, the Queen of Clean. You've still got that title.
I am the original. Yes, absolutely.
You're joining us to talk about the annual spring clean.
Indeed.
Is this a good time?
definitely a good time, and particularly since we've been, you know, all this time in lockdown, our boilers have been working overtime, and with people spending so much more time at home, so they could certainly use a service and a bit of a makeover. And this is a great time to do it while the engineers are slightly less busy than in winter when people have emergencies with things breaking down. So a good time to have it done. The other thing about having your appliances checked is that if they'll run more efficiently, you need them to have your appliances checked once a year, and then they'll run much more efficiently, as well as possibly saving lives.
You're still appearing on our televisions and still cleaning?
Now and again, yes, absolutely. And I think this, I'm really pleased to take part in this campaign. I think it's really, really important. It's the sort of thing that's kind of at the back of people's minds. They don't really think about it enough until all of a sudden there's a gas leak. And, it's, you know, it's the easiest thing to do, to get onto gassaferegister.co.uk, make your appointment and get it done. And then it's all out of the way and you can have peace of mind. One less thing to worry about.
We'll come back to you in a moment. Bob Kerr from the Gas Safe Register. I am probably one of millions of people that have got a contract with a very well-known national service agent. But we didn't get our boiler serviced last year because of the pandemic, obviously. So is it even more important that we get it done?
Yes, Chris, completely, completely more important. I think if you look at where we've been, everyone's been at home more. The appliances have had a heavy winter use, more so than normal. And obviously the backlogs that may well be in place, as you say, because a company's not been able to get into properties. And people have been more apprehensive about letting tradesmen into their property as well. So that's all added up to that fact that it's now more important than ever that you get that annual inspection done.
And how would you know if there was something going wrong?
So some of the signs, Chris, of an appliance, be that a boiler, a cooker or a fire, of something going wrong are lazy yellow flames, if you can see the appliance burning, rather than crisp blue ones, marks around or stains around the appliance itself, and unexpected condensation in the room are all other signs. That can lead to carbon monoxide, which we know is deemed the silent killer. And signs of that are headaches and dizziness, etc., or loss of consciousness in the fire extreme.
Now, hopefully we won't be needing our gas appliances until the autumn. Should we do it now?
Yes, most definitely. I think in the winter time, engineers are even busier because of maintenance and breakdowns of appliances. So during the spring and the summer, the workload is less heavy. So now's the time to get it done, get it all checked and get it ready, dare I say it, for the next winter when it comes.
If people haven't got a contract, can they just talk to their local Gas Safe person?
Yes, they can. They can go onto our website, gassaferegister.co.uk. You can put your postcode in and it will show you all the local registered qualified engineers in your area with contact details that you can get hold of them, and they'll be glad to come around and do an appliance check for you.
But what about if you've got a contract like we have and you can't get a booking? We paid, so we don't really want to pay somebody else.
Yes, a good question. And that's down to the service provider that you have the contract with. They should be making arrangements to clear their backlogs and get to you as soon as practically possible.
Going back to Aggie, is it a good time for spring cleaning?
You know, the sun's coming out, everything's warming up a little bit, time to clean the windows, let the sun shine in. And before we, you know, we come out of lockdown, before we, you know, meeting other people and getting out and about and maybe even planning a holiday, it's a really good time to get all those niggly jobs done. The ones that have been kind of hanging around at the back of our minds thinking, oh, plenty of time to do that. Well, now's the time. Get it done.
And is there something that you should take priority over?
You know, the most important thing is to feel safe in your home. So if you have gas appliances, then do have them checked. You know, it's like your smoke alarms. These things are absolutely crucial to keeping your home safe.
Thank you both for joining us. Bob Kerr, Gas Safe Register, and Aggie McKenzie. And finally, Bob, that website.
gassaferegister.co.uk.
Now, when you watch television, and in particular Hollyoaks, a young man called Rory Douglas Speed is there together with his fiancée, Zadine Mulcairn. And he's joining us now to talk about, not about acting, but about diabetes. Good morning, Rory.
Hello, how are you?
Okay, diabetes, is that something just for the young?
No, not at all. Type 1 diabetes especially, it can be diagnosed at any age. I was diagnosed 8 years old. I know people that were diagnosed in their 30s, 40s and 50s, so it really, rules don't apply. anyone can be diagnosed with it, and essentially it's an autoimmune disease where your body stops producing insulin and you have to take it accordingly to stabilise your blood sugars.
How do you do that? I mean, anybody that knows somebody that's had diabetes or has still got diabetes has seen them sneak off to have a quick inject. Is that something that you get used to?
Yeah, I think some people get used to it, and I think some people do not. There's a lot of stigma around it, and I think, you know, the numbers are incredible, Chris. I mean, I think there was a research study done recently where I think it was like 71% of people living with type 1 diabetes avoid doing their blood glucose in public for fear of judgment and, you know, the stigmas that come with it, which is an incredible number. And I think, you know, we've got to start raising awareness for people who don't have it and for people who actually have it, because I think there's maybe a severe lack of education in it. I think people think type 1 diabetes is the same as type 2 diabetes, but no, they're two separate things.
And how can you tell the difference?
Well, like I say, type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune disease and it's irreversible. Whereas type 2 diabetes is slightly different in a sense that it's when somebody's body becomes or can start to become slightly resistant to the insulin, and it can be tracked and helped and managed through diet. And in some cases, it can be reversed. Whereas, like I say, type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune disease and it can't be reversed, unfortunately. And again, the numbers for that are incredible. I think 83% of people have incorrectly insinuated that the disease is self-inflicted and that you can change it with your diet, which is incredible, isn't it? Just for the sake of confusing the two together.
It's absolutely amazing. Can you inherit it? I mean, is it going to affect your son?
I think people like to think it's inherited. I think they tested my twin sister, for instance. I have a twin sister. And they tested to see if she had diabetes also, and she didn't. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm the only person in my family that has type 1 diabetes. And I don't actually think you can inherit it. It's just an autoimmune disease, and scientists don't really know what triggers it.
I mean, that's the point, isn't it? They don't know what causes it. And once you've got it, that's it. You can't do anything about it other than keep it under control.
That's it. That is exactly it. That is the message. Yeah. You have to try and keep it under control on a day to day basis. And like I say, not many people know that. So what we're doing is at the moment we're using social media to raise awareness, and we're doing a thing called, a type 1 diabetes balloon challenge. And it's just a nice fun thing that people across social media are going to be doing, where they do a daily task whilst juggling a blue balloon. And I think that the message is that simple. That's what having type 1 diabetes is like. And for any of your listeners who've maybe had it for 30 years, like me, I could never really put it into words, but it is like keeping a balloon afloat in the air. Juggling a balloon is very much like your blood sugar is trying to keep things balanced. And it's something nobody can see. It's an invisible balloon. And I think that's such a brilliant message. So we're going to start utilising that across social media, where we're going to have people doing day-to-day activities whilst juggling a blue balloon and keeping it afloat in the air.
And how can people get more information about this balloon challenge?
Well, they can go online. It'll be all over Instagram and other platforms. And if you just type in hashtag T1D balloon challenge, you can find it all there. You can do your own videos. You can nominate your family. It can be your gran, your auntie, your uncle, your daughter, your son. Get everybody involved. And the more people that take part, the merrier. You can find it all online.
Talking about your acting, does it really affect you on set?
Yeah, I mean, it has done. I mean, like you say, it affects you in some way, shape or form almost every minute of every day. And there's been times I've been on set where I've been taking a hypo whilst doing a take, and I've just had to sort of adjust and deal with it accordingly. And yeah, every day is different. You know, I often find, I use this excuse anyway, as soon as my blood sugar starts running higher, I have a tendency to start laughing because I corpse a lot on set. You see, I'm too busy laughing. I always get told off. I blame my blood sugar for being high if that happens. It makes me a bit giddy.
Working with your fiance, Nadine, is that easy or does it become difficult sometimes?
Well, it depends if she's going to be listening to this or not. I don't know what to say. No. It's brilliant. You know, we met on the show and we've now got in typical soap fashion. We have like a baby together and we're engaged. And it's brilliant. It's great. She can keep her eye on me 24 hours a day. So it's good. We've not done much work together recently, but hopefully we'll start working together again soon.
Have you been affected by the lockdown?
Yeah, of course. I think we've got a young baby and he was only 4 months old when we first went into the lockdown. And there was pros and cons to that. At the end of the day, it gave us a routine. You know, we were up early with him every day. We had to feed him every day. So it gave us a sense of routine, which I think we found really, really beneficial, actually.
A final word. What do you say to people who know somebody that's got type 1 diabetes? What should they look out for in their friend?
Just to make sure they're safe and to be polite. And again, I think asking questions and getting the education is a major step forward for the diabetes, the type 1 diabetes community. You know, like you say, it's to not confuse the two and to be as polite as possible with it. And you know, to ask questions, but ask them in a particular way that makes somebody want to answer with no stigma attached. And, you know, when somebody educates themselves on something, you know, knowledge is power. It's great for moving forwards for everybody.
I'm sure many people who've entered the portals of the Royal Sussex County Hospital in Eastern Road will have walked up that staircase and seen in front of them the doors to the chapel. Well, that's going to close and it's going to be no more. And joining us to tell us all about it, Richard Beard, Head of Communications for the 3Ts Project. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning, Chris. Thanks for having me on.
So the chapel, after, what, 165 years, is going to be no more?
I wouldn't say it's going to be no more. I'd say it's starting a new life. What we are doing as part of the redevelopment is we're taking the interior of the chapel, which I think everybody agrees is beautiful and is also Grade 2 listed, and we're moving that into a purpose-built space in the first of the redevelopment's new buildings facing onto Eastern Road.
Now, one of the features of the existing chapel is it's got a lovely lantern in the middle of it, so you get lots of light. Presumably, there will be no room for a lantern.
Yes, there is. I've been into the space. So if you imagine, what we've done is we've built a space that effectively envelops the entire chapel, including the lantern on the top, with space. Because of where it's placed, we won't be able to have natural light coming in through that lantern. So there will be space for lights to be round the outside of the lantern to replicate daylight.
That's amazing. And in this day and age, that the project's taken time and, of course, money to do something like that. Is that indicative of the rest of the development, that it's in tune with people?
I certainly hope so, and I certainly think so, from the sort of responses we've got over the last, and I gulp when I say this, 11 years that I've been working on this project, talking to many thousands of people about it. I like to think across the entirety of the project, from the increased room for patients coming from the wards in the Barry building, which we're moving into the first new building, through to the teams that are moving into new accommodation for many of our specialist services, that we've managed to get the balance right between the needs of patients, the needs of the public, and the needs of creating what is a large and complex building.
And of course, you've had to build the building in the middle of a pandemic.
Interesting times, I think, would be how we'd describe that.
When will the first patients be admitted?
We're still working through the final impacts of COVID on the project. As you can imagine, it severely limited the number of people. At times, it severely limited the number of people we could have on the site actually working, because the first new building is enclosed now. So it's like working inside an enclosed building itself. But I would imagine we'll be seeing the building to be complete. It would be probably towards in the second half of 2022.
Right. So not long to go now.
No, it feels like it's a little way off, but actually blink twice, tie your shoelaces and we'll probably be there.
We're talking about the chapel. That is part of the original 1856 building. So is that now going to be demolished?
Yes. If folks are looking at the hospital site as it stands at the moment, we have what we call the Stage 1 building. It will have a different name, but at the moment we call it the Stage 1 building. So that's the first of the new buildings. And as you look from Eastern Road to the front of the hospital, the original Barry building, so named because it was designed by Charles Barry, that's on the left-hand side of the site. All of the services from the Barry building move into the Stage 1 building, into the new accommodation, and then we take down that original Barry building, which opened its doors. It took its first patient in 1828. We replace that with a second new clinical facility.
That's going to be some sight to see that demolished. Is it going to have a huge hole in the ground as well?
It will we'll have to dig down some, the same as we did for Stage 1. We're going to have to put significant foundations and footings in place, and we will have some underground space there as well, yes.
We talked about the chapel and the fact that it's now closed. What happens if people have got some memories of loved ones and the chapel itself? Can they still access those?
They can. So there are a couple of ways of doing this. If people want to share memories with us, then they can go onto the web page that we've set up, especially for the move of the chapel, which is www.bsuh, that's Bravo September Uniform Hotel, .nhs.uk /chapel move. And there's a button there that you can click on to send us an email with your memories. There's also a 3D scan of the interior of the chapel that you can navigate round.
That's amazing, that 3D scan. I've looked at that myself. And lots of things you see that, unless you've been in the chapel and examined it in detail, you've never known. I mean, some lovely woodwork and, of course, the memorial books and plaques, they're going to be preserved.
They absolutely are. Now, the memorial books are very important because people do come in on the day when they've lost a loved one, when their name has been added to the book, to see those. So the memorial books will be kept in the chaplaincy office, which is just next door to the location of the chapel. And people will be welcomed to go in and see those memorial books there, and we'll be able to add new names there if we need to as well. We're also going to be putting together a space within the Barry building. We're working on that at the moment, which will act as a place for quiet reflection and prayer for people whilst the chapel is closed.
One other feature, of course, of the chapel is the floor, the wonderful black and white floor. Will that get moved as well?
Yes. When you stand, people go and have a look on the webpage at the scan, or if they have a memory of the chapel, walking into the chapel, if you can see it, we are moving it or we are reproviding it exactly as it is. Because you can't move plasterwork. If you try to take it off the wall, as anybody will know who's tried to do this, it just crumbles. So we have to reprovide that, but it will look exactly the same as it does at the moment.
A final question. The helicopter pad at the moment, yes, on the top, that's not been used as far as I'm aware.
Bringing something like this into use is a lengthier process than would seem to be the case by common sense. So the structure itself has been approved by the Civil Aviation Authority. We are working through a couple of final elements on the support services, so the lifts that run up to, because there are two lifts that run up to the heli deck. As soon as that's done, then we can work with the Civil Aviation Authority to get operational approval. And once that's done, there's a couple of months of commissioning works. We can bring it into use. So I would imagine that we'd maybe see trial landings towards the end of this year.
Richard, thank you very much for joining us. And those two websites again, please.
So the website for the chapel move is www.bsuh, that's Bravo September Uniform Hotel, .nhs.uk/chapel move.
We were hearing from Richard Beard about the closure of the chapel at the Royal Sussex County Hospital. One Garden Brighton. That's and right. Liz?
I'm Liz Moland and I'm the head of marketing.
And tell me, what is One Garden Brighton all about?
Sure. So One Garden Brighton is a walled garden within Stanmer Park near Brighton. And it's a destination garden. It's free to enter to the public. We have beautifully designed show gardens, a market retail space and a kitchen, which is a destination eatery for people to come and enjoy.
It sounds amazing, but this space was derelict, wasn't it?
That's correct, yes. So not too long ago, the site was completely overgrown. It had many old glass houses, greenhouses across the site. And essentially it was closed to the public. It used to be an old plant nursery and has since been redeveloped by ourselves as part of a Heritage Lottery Fund project to open it to the public for the first time in its history.
Talking about money, where did the money to do all that come from?
Of course. So, yes, we were delighted to be part of a funding bid as something called Parks for People, about regenerating, restoring Stanmer Park, so not just the walled garden, but other elements of Stanmer Park itself, through a Heritage Lottery Fund bid with the Brighton and Hove City Council, South Downs National Park and other partners across the park, and Plumpton College, who are managing One Garden Brighton. And we had about £3.8 million put just into the walled garden alone as part of that restoration project bid to be able to restore this space.
And you said earlier that it's free to enter, anybody can come.
That's right.
How does it fund it?
So we, as a college, we are funding it through the sales that we have in the market and the kitchen itself. Plumpton College are also managing and maintaining the space. We have students based here, RHS students, part-time students helping us to maintain the beautiful landscaped gardens. And we have also a fantastic team here within the market and kitchen itself ready to serve our visitors.
And wonderful cafe.
Yeah, that's right, a beautiful cafe. So it uses all the produce from the garden itself. We have a beautiful kitchen garden and we really want to offer something different every day. So with the seasons, that menu is inspiring, changes, that you can essentially walk up to One Kitchen, have something beautiful from the menu that has been grown in the garden and go back to One Market and take home that produce to recreate it yourself at home.
So One Market is virtually a shop.
Essentially, yes. So we have lots of local producers. For us, it was really about offering some of this space for local producers, giving their businesses that platform and to be able to sell their produce within this space. So we have lots of local produce, food and drink, but also makers, crafts, gifts, homeware as well.
Looking out over the window from the greenhouse where we are at the moment, you perhaps you hear the music going on in the background. There's a landscaped area there which is quite huge.
That's right, yes. So about a good third of the walled garden space are those formal show gardens that you can come and enjoy. So we have 9 beautiful contemporary show gardens, all designed by Dominic Cole, who designed the Eden Project. And they were designed to really reflect urban gardening. So it isn't your traditional walled garden, very rectangular, linear, flat. It is meant to be the secret garden that is discovered as the plants now grow and as they develop and mature. You'll be able to discover everything from an all-seasons garden to a pollinator garden to an urban and hot and dry garden. And it gives you tips, practical tips to be able to take home. You can buy the plants you see in the gardens, in the market itself, and be inspired, no matter the size of your space, that gardening really is for everyone.
Part of the original layout, which was of course the Brighton and Hove Council Parks Department, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes.
And wasn't open to the public.
That's right, yes. So this was all closed. It was a plant nursery for the council to maintain its own city parks. So we took away all those greenhouses, redeveloped, re-landscaped it, rediscovered this walled garden that is certainly very old. The estate was kind of taken over by the Pelham family in 1713, and just reopen it really and celebrate its history and heritage, but also showcase horticulture of the future.
And one part, talking about the future, that hasn't yet been restored is the palm house.
That's right, yes. So we have an amazing palm house just outside the walls as you enter. So as you enter the gates, you'll see the palm house on the left. It's a 1950s glass house, actually, so not as old as people might suspect. It's one of only 3 remaining in the UK of its kind. And we have really would like to restore that as part of the restoration project, reheat it, reglaze it, and open it to the public to enjoy perhaps a butterfly walkway and really look over. over the wall and enjoy the kind of tropical plants that will be in there as well.
And how can people find One Garden Brighton?
Sure, so you can visit our website, onegardenbrighton.com. We've got a great FAQ on there. We're open daily, 9:30 till 5, and we have all the direction info on there. Lots of big car parks. It's very accessible. We're flat all throughout, so great to access and for all to enjoy.
Looking to the future, how can you see it developing from here?
Yes, absolutely. So something about One Garden Brighton is, unlike visiting other gardens where maybe you go and you know what to expect every time, we really want to celebrate the season, something different every day. We want our students to really be involved in planting and new designs. We want to put together a full events programme for all of our community to enjoy, from daytime events to private evening events and small theatre events in the summer on our lawn. So for us, the really next steps is bringing the space alive throughout the seasons and having lots of different workshops and events for people to enjoy.
And finally, Liz, how can people find out more details?
Yep, so that's onegardenbrighton.com. Visit the website, you'll find our full events listings, how to get here and much more.
For our final interview in this edition of At Home This Morning, we're joined by an author, Lou Fraser, who has just published and written a book called The Littlest Yak. Where did the idea first come from, Lou?
I was sat on a plane going up to Scotland, and it is a terrible stormy October day, and the plane was delayed, and I was sat with my daughter, and I looked across at her, and I suddenly realised how much she'd grown up, how much bigger she was than she was in my head, and how time had passed, and I realised how much more she wanted to grow up, and I thought how much I wanted her to stay small, because when you're small, things are wonderful. And that was really the start of the journey. I thought, you know, the idea of when you're little, suddenly thinking that being a grown-up is great and wanting to race towards adulthood. And as a parent, looking back and thinking, please don't race too much. And that's what started it.
As a great-grandparent of a two-year-old plus, dare I say, little madam, I know exactly what you mean. So what is the age group the book is aimed at?
Well, when I wrote it, I thought it would be solely 3 years, 4 years and 5 years. But actually, I've got people reading it in schools with teachers ages 6 and 7. And there's quite a lot of discussion that you can have about the Littlest Yak in classrooms. And the Oscars Book Prize even have worked with Silip and done some notes for teachers to use in classrooms. So it's much older than I thought. And actually, people are reading it to children much younger than I thought. People are reading to, you know, babies and sort of 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds. And I don't think you could ever start reading early enough. And I also don't think there should ever be an age limit on what you read. So I think if you want to be 10 or 20 or 50 and read it, I think you should just go ahead and dive in.
So how would you describe the book?
It's Gertie's story is in rhyme, and it's a story that's quite a short story. So you've got sort of 14 spreads. It's fully illustrated, and it's a story that recounts what happens when Gertie finds out that actually her smallness can save the day when a crisis occurs, and how being small is pretty wonderful.
You talked there about the illustrations. You didn't illustrate it yourself.
No, I'm afraid to say that my ability to draw is probably limited to stick men. So luckily for me, the amazing Kate Hindley, who is already a really much beloved, hugely established both author and illustrator herself, agreed to come on this bonkers journey with me and illustrate Gertie. And I'm so grateful that she did, because she took the story to, you know, new detail and new levels that I could never have done. So it's wonderful. The illustrations are just wonderful. She's done such an amazing job.
You live just over the border from us here in Brighton, in Hampshire. So where is the book available to purchase?
Gosh, you know, the book seems to be everywhere I turn. So in all the places you'd expect, all the lovely independent booksellers who've been so supportive of Kate and myself. You can find it in places like Waters and of course, Amazon, who are, in fact, a supporter and sponsor of the Oscars Book Prize. So you can find it online. But especially now that people are coming out of lockdown, it's lovely to go and visit your independents too. You can find it, you know, left, right and centre. It's very hard to not find Gertie at the moment.
That's wonderful. Now, you talked there about the prize. And of course, this is the Oscars Book Prize for 2021. So what do you get as part of the prize?
I think the most important thing for Kate and myself is actually the recognition, because within the industry, the Oscars Book Prize for picture book writers is a hugely prestigious, very significant award. And to have that, you know, for children and families and teachers and readers and our peers, you know, and our publishers to see that we've been awarded that and you know, recognised for all the hard work, that because it's such a team effort. There's so many of us that work on the book. I mean, that was the first thing. It was just a wonderful industry moment for us. It really was. But also, you know, Kate and I also get, with the Oscars Book Prize, we also get a cash prize, actually. And so Kate and I split the cash prize between us, which is really fantastic. I was asked a very lovely question, actually, by a little girl who said, "What will Kate spend the money on? Will she buy new pencils to do more drawings?" And I can't answer for Kate as to what she'll spend her money on, but I will definitely spend some of mine doing up my shed in the garden, which is where I write all my books.
Have you got another book in mind already?
Yes. You know, I think I'm losing track a bit, but I think we've got 10 or 11 books planned. We've got quite a lot over the next few years. I've got a couple more books coming out this year, which is very exciting. And then my next book with Simon & Schuster coming out in spring next year, which is with a new illustrator. Hasn't been announced yet, the details, but it's really exciting. And I love this book. And then Kate and I are back with the Yak next year. Next autumn, the Yak is back and Kate and I will be returning to Gertie's Mountain for a new adventure. And so I'm so excited about that. I really am looking forward to it.
And what got you into writing in the first place?
I think it starts with reading. You know, I was a really, really avid reader, really voracious reader when I was little. And I remember being very small when I informed somebody that I was going to be a writer. And I've always written. I've written all my life. So I've got manuscripts stacked up in boxes and in the foot of the wardrobe and, much to my husband's horror, bookshelves everywhere. And I had always planned to be a writer. It just took me a bit of time to get here.
Returning back to my little one, do you think this is something that would appeal to her?
Well, like I said, I think you can never start too early reading. I read to my daughter, started reading books to her when she was probably 2 days old. And I think it's really a great thing to read to them, to hear the intonation of language and the rhythm and that connection between, you know, a parent or a carer or a teacher or a librarian. When you read to somebody small, I don't think there's anything more magical. I really don't. So I'd say read away. Start right now.
And that just about brings us to the end of this edition of At Home This Morning, our magazine programme that is brought to you by Brighton's local radio station, Radio Reverb. We're broadcasting on 97.2 FM, on digital radio with DAB+, and online at radioreverb.com. And so, until we next meet over the airwaves, it's goodbye from me. However, don't forget that my co-presenter, Richard Davis, will be here with his next edition in a couple of weeks' time. But there's just time for me to say cheerio. And of course, to remind you, you've been listening to At Home This Morning, which is a Grey Matters production for Radio Reverb. And you can listen again to a selection of some of the editions of the show by entering either Radio Reverb or Grey Matters Production CIC into your internet browser, selecting the Listen Again tab, and then just selecting the show you'd like to hear. And so, until we next meet over the airwaves, or however you listen, this is Chris English signing off as usual with Please Keep Safe and Enjoy Those Hugs.